Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how are you handling the craziness of life? Wouldn't it be more fun to travel to the beyond, to get out of here for a while and enjoy safe travels? And what does that mean? Maybe you got to even get out of body. Wouldn't that be something? So we're actually going to talk to an expert about this, a man who has experimented with this and has had many experiences of his own, and has written a wonderful book. I love the book. It's The Quantum Akashic Field, A Guide to Out-of-Body Experiences for the Astral Traveler. And so we're going to look at that and many other understandings of life that out-of-body experiences give us. And to do that is the author of The Quantum Akashic Field, Jim Willis. Jim, welcome to Energy Stew.
Thank you, Peter. Great to be with you today.
Oh, I'm so glad to talk with you because I've always been interested in OBEs. And it's something I've had some experience with, but I haven't taken it on as seriously as you have. And it takes a lot of dedication because there's a lot of meditation to it, a lot of getting into the groove. And also, you're a guy who lives out in the woods and you're used to the quiet and, you know, the stillness.
Well, that's the reason I live out in the woods, actually. I moved out here for that specific purpose. I had been in the ministry, a Christian minister, for 40 years. And going into the ministry at an early age, especially when most of us went in back in the early 70s, you go in expecting that what's going to happen is you're going to go on this lifetime journey of spiritual growth, and everybody's going to be interested just like you are, and it's going to be a wonderful lifetime of exploration. Then you get into it, and all of a sudden you discover, like any other profession, there's politics involved, there's minutiae involved.
And dogma.
Always the planning, always the thinking about the next thing.
Right.
And pretty soon 40 years goes by and you wonder what happened. So when my wife and I retired 10 years ago, we deliberately came to the woods. We wanted to go on a retreat. And we built this little house back here in the woods. We had to build a driveway back into it. I don't want to give the idea we're totally primitive, because we also have a hot tub and fiber optic cables, just like Henry Thoreau had, you know. And we came back here, and the idea was to spend a year in the woods, basically wrestling with God, trying to, God is a loaded term nowadays. A lot of people have different versions of that. You can substitute source, spirit, Manitou, Akasha, anything you want. But it was basically we wanted to experience the reality rather than the illusion. We wanted to delve in deep. And that's why we came out here to the woods. Days go by sometimes when we don't see anybody. And quite frankly, it took that kind of commitment in order for us to begin to experience what we wanted to experience.
I love that.
Yeah.
And I live in New York City, and yet there are many days where I really don't like to come into contact with others, and I live right by the park, and I go for runs in the park.
Sure.
And so, but the thing is that you then took it a step farther, because not only, because you weren't just satisfied with the woods, you wanted to travel into the universe.
Yeah. It happened really by accident. I got into it through dowsing myself. I never believed in dowsing. I had seen some water dowsers at work and everything else, but I got interested in the whole idea of earth energies. There seemed to be some kind of an energy, a force, a power here that surrounded us. And so I went down to my local hardware store. They didn't carry dowsing rods for some reason, but they did carry copper wire, and you know, pretty heavy duty copper wire. So I got a couple of links of copper wire, bent them into what we call L rods, and discovered, lo and behold, that there this was energy all the way through this place. We had begun to discover that there were people here, and we live actually on a ley line with many energy lines surrounding around it. And through the dowsing rods and through asking yes and no questions, I came actually into contact with beings of extra entities, extra worldly entities that, quite frankly, I never believed in before, even though they were in my religious tradition. As a minister, I sing about angels from the realms of glory, and I sing about the angel Gabriel appeared to Daniel in the Old Testament, and Mary and Muhammad and all of that. I just looked at those things as metaphors. It never even really occurred to me.
And you had someone show real. But you had someone show up that who was 25,000 years old.
Yeah, yeah. He is still my spiritual mentor. We talk daily.
Wow.
It was terribly restricting, though, because with dowsing rods, you can only get yes and no answers. And as I began to meditate, lo and behold, one day, without realizing it, this entity began to speak through my lips. I don't know what he said because I was gone, but my wife was right there, and she recorded it. And since then, it's happened a couple of dozen times when all of a sudden I'll be looking at Barb, and she'll look kind of funny. And I'll say, Barb, what's wrong? She says, don't you realize what just happened? No. Don't you know what you just said? Nope. and through a series of conversations and with the dowsing rods, yes and no questions, I got to know this spirit guide who was a shaman who lived on this particular piece of property many thousands of years ago, and who was probably the first of his kind, the first shaman, and who I have come to believe called me here. And to hear myself say this is absolutely unbelievable, because for the first 60 years of my life, I never would have believed any of this. This was totally outside my experience. This was just all new age woo-woo stuff, you know, and yet here it is. I think that there was probably something going on that in my very personality, because when I retired out here, I retired with an agenda. I wanted to literally wrestle with God. That was the Bible verse that was in my mind. It comes from the Old Testament. Jacob and Esau had their big falling out. Jacob had run up north and there married the women who would become the matriarchs of the 12 tribes of Israel. But finally the day came for Jacob and Esau to be reunited. And so the night before, Jacob was worried. He was running back and walking back and forth like all of us do when we get nervous about the next day. And the Bible tells the craziest story. He met this entity and wrestled with him all night. And he realized as the dawn was breaking that he was wrestling with God. And he said, I will not let you go until you bless me. And that was the verse, the Bible verse, that was on my mind when I came here. I came here even before I drove the first nail into the house or dug the foundations for the house. I looked around at the woods and I said, I will not let you go until you bless me. Mm. Little did I know what was going on, because a couple of years ago, I was asked to go to Cornwall in the UK to give a talk about world religions. And while I was over there, I had never been to England before. So while I was over there, I decided I had to go to the little town of Fenny Compton up northwest of England, where my ancestors used to preach. The church where they preached is still there 300-400 years ago. They were ministers in or clergy in the Church of England. And I got the town historian to let me into the church, and I saw their name on the little plaque, and I stood in the pulpit where my ancestor preached every Sunday, and there from the pulpit, I looked over at this stained glass window that he saw every single Sunday, and lo and behold, it depicted Jacob wrestling with God, saying, I will not let you go.
It's your heritage.
I never knew that. Somehow his spiritual DNA was passed on to generation after generation after generation, and here I am fulfilling what he saw every Sunday morning.
Right, that's wonderful. And then what's so interesting is that you're taking it to another level of in this wrestling, because you're exploring the universe.
Yeah.
In you know, let's call it out of body. It's, you know, there are people of out of body who they see their bodies out.
Yeah.
But also we can just have visions.
Oh yeah, yeah. That out of the whole word out of body. I know Bob Monroe coined it, OBEs, but I don't know really what's happening. It's a science, I'm sure, but it's past any science that we understand yet. I don't know whether we actually go someplace or through the wonders of the Akashic field, whether, and the whole idea of entanglement, whether we are actually in effect leaving our bodies, or whether we are just connecting with the reality that is outside our bodies and gives us the impression that we are leaving our bodies.
Or that it's within. Within.
Yeah.
Rather than without.
Yes. Yeah.
And there's math about it.
Yeah.
You know, that there's the inner world within the atoms are larger than the outer world of the universe.
Yeah. 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 I like to picture it as ourselves. We're surrounded by, well, I call it a fence with five sides, and those five sides are five senses, hearing and tasting and touching and sight and smell, and they serve a good purpose. They filter out a lot of information that's coming to us, so we don't become aware of it with our intellect, which is kind of let's call it the roof over this fence.
Well, maybe at this stage of consciousness, it would become too confusing.
Yeah, that's right, right. And they do perfectly well. I mean, what would we be like if we could actually see all the colors that exist, or hear all the sounds that are out there, or smell all the smells? We would be so inundated with information that we really couldn't handle it. So in effect, they're good. They filter out a lot of extraneous stuff, which makes it easier for us to live and do all the things we have to do. But we make the mistake of saying reality is what exists inside this fence. Reality is what we perceive of it. And I don't think that's the case at all. I think reality is outside the fence. What we experience is not the reality, it's a reality.
Well, you've gone beyond the fence. And a lot of your book is really about how to do that, how to prepare for it,
right.
How to stay disciplined,
yeah,
to stay on purpose.
Sure.
And also, you talk about who we are as individuals in the universe, and how diverse we are, and how we all, our realities are all very different from each other, even though there's a lot of agreement.
Yes. Yeah. We are. I like to put it this way: we're on a journey of discovery while we're in the material world, and before we are born into this body, and when we leave this body, we are in the source, and in the source, there's perfect unity. There's no individuality. You can't experience individuality in the source, because all is one. And so here in this body, I think we're on an experiment. We're on a journey of discovery to experience individuality, and then take that experience back to the source, back to the collective, so to speak. My science fiction stuff getting out. But to take it back to the source instilling within the source something that you cannot experience while you're there. And so when we feel so alone in this life, we feel like we're all by ourselves. We feel sometimes horribly cut off from everything, with a very strong decision, a very courageous decision, I think we made to deliberately do that. And so when we feel that way, we have to remind ourselves what we're doing is exactly what we set out to do in the first place. And it's important.
The purpose of life is to explore individuality.
Yeah, exactly.
In harsh ways, often.
Yeah, that's the trouble with duality, isn't it? There's good, but there's also bad. Right. There's love, but there's also hate. And there's chaos, but there's also, you know, unity. So we get the full shot here. And I don't think we should be down on ourselves when we feel cut off. I think we should almost be proud of that courageous decision we made.
We're writing our unique stories.
Yes, exactly. That's a great way of putting it. Yeah, writing our own story.
Right.
We're the central character in it.
And often courageously so.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. People, when I was doing pastoral counseling, people used to come into my office and they'd all say, what's wrong with me? I feel so terrible. And they'd tell me all these things that were going on. And I'd say, well, probably you feel so terrible because there's a lot of terrible things going on in your life and you're doing it. You're doing something about it. You're talking about it. You're getting through it. That's courage, tremendous courage, I think.
Yeah. It amazes me how strong our resilience is
in the
face of such craziness in this world of, and even now, you know, we're facing this virus that seems to, we don't know how consuming it is. It's certainly consuming our minds. And yet everybody will be tested as to, what their resourcefulness is and responsibility.
Absolutely. And that's the trouble with experiences. They're really important, but they're just not always fun. And the world has been through this before. I wonder what it was like to live, for instance, in Europe during the bubonic plague. Or I study a lot of lost civilizations, and to realize about the diseases that have hit these civilizations in the past, and the natural catastrophes and the wars and all of those things. We've been through them before, but that doesn't diminish at all how we feel, and it doesn't diminish their importance. And so what's facing us is serious, and I don't want to diminish it at all. But on the other hand, it's a great opportunity for us to find courage and to find love and to find compassion and to find goodness in all of these.
Well, I think we're at a time in evolution where we can hold it from a higher plane of what it means about love, what it means about caring and responsibility to others that wasn't as pervasive historically.
Yeah, I have read a lot of the journals that were smuggled out of Germany, for instance, just before Hitler came to power, and read some of the journals that were kept by people and some of the oral histories that were kept by people who were gathered up at night and walked off to the concentration camps, and the horror that was there is terrible. But what I'm also amazed at, the tremendous courage and the tremendous resilience and the tremendous hope that was held by so many of these people. They are inspirational, just absolutely inspirational. I wonder what it would have been like to have been out in the Great Plains here in the United States back after the days of the Civil War, when the Sioux, the Cherokee, we saw their entire way of life, their entire civilization, totally demolished within 10 years. And what it must have been like for them to be herded away, their kids taken away from them and sent off to reservations, sometimes miles away, and told they can't even speak their language. And to see their entire sense of who they were as a people, as a nation, to see that all uprooted in a very short sense of time. And I think about them, how horrible that must have been. And yet what tremendous courage it took in so many different ways. So whatever is going to happen to us in the future, and I'm sure there will be many more things besides this to hit us in the future, and it's not going to be fun. But they have given us an example to follow.
Well, also, how about the Africans that were stolen away for slavery?
I just can't imagine what that must have been like, to taken away from everything you know, and placed in a ship, spend a couple of months in a ship under those kind of conditions, and then come here with no sense of hope, with no sense of ever being able to get out of it. And lo and behold, from that experience, as horrible as it was, came one of the first great American artistic inventions, which was the spiritual. And they were all talks about hope. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. And all that. What a tremendous inspiration that whole thing is.
Well, yeah, I guess that's the purpose. To me, the reason we come here to go through all this suffering is to find the light.
Yeah.
And finding the light, we advance the universe.
Yeah. And that's why I think out-of-body experience has been so important for me, at least. I had a good friend who was a member of my church years ago. I got a call in the middle of the night one time, and a nurse from the hospital where he was called me and said, he's not expected to make it through the night. And he's asking for you. Can you come? So it was the middle of the night, but of course I put on my clothes, got in my car, drove to the hospital, and I walked in, and there he was with all the tubes and everything that they put in him and all this kind of stuff. And I went to his bedside. I took his hand. I said, Bradley, are you ready to cross over? They tell me that it may be tonight. And he started crying. He said, Jim, I was a successful man. And he was. He had a couple of different doctorates in different things, one in education and one in science. He was the founder of a university. He was a member of the community in great standing. He was a pillar of the church. Everybody liked him. Everybody respected him. Brilliant man. And I couldn't imagine. I said, well, what do you mean you're not, you didn't prepare? And he said, the thing that I should have prepared for, the one thing that was most important, I never prepared for it. And I said, what was that? And he said, I never prepared for this moment. He never prepared to die. And so we were lucky that night. He made it through that night, and he made it through 10 more before he finally crossed over.
And he also had you, so serendipity to that.
I spent a good deal of time with him every day for the next 10 days. I was there in the hospital. I don't know whether I did anything for him. I know he did a tremendous amount for me. But it made me see that that's probably one of the most important things we can do, is to prepare for that time. In this materialistic life in which we live today, we try to pretend it's not going to happen. If somebody gets deathly sick and they say it may be close to the end, our immediate response is to rush to them and say, oh no, you're going to live forever, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but we also don't understand death.
No, we don't.
So many people think of it as the end. But when you can get out of body, and many people have had near-death experiences and hypnotic regressions back in between lifetimes, you get to realize that there's more to life than what we hear about, and we can let go. I think the animal kingdom certainly is more easily prepared for death than humans are.
Yeah. And I think our ancestors were too. They lived in a different age. They had a different mindset. I think they had a whole survival psychological toolkit that we still have. It's within us, but it is atrophied through lack of death, through disuse. Well, and that's a tough thing. That's why I think out of body experiences are so important.
Yes, and there's so much more to talk about, because your book has a lot of your travels in here, and understanding of this more esoteric reality that we can join, and what it means. And because we're getting near the end of the show, and I think this is a conversation that can be continued.
I hope so. Sure.
Yeah. Good. Because we really want to become more familiar with our larger soul.
Yeah, yeah. This is, uh, uh, I I'm not very good when it comes to technology. I have a wonderful daughter who does all that stuff for me. We built her a house right next door in the woods. She came up and lived up here. And she has put up a website and she's put up a Facebook page. And if anybody's interested in going into this more, there is a website, jimwillis.net, that lists all my books and articles I've written, a lot more about this particular subject. And on Facebook, she always has up, every time I'm on a show such as this, or being able to talk to someone like yourself. And so if they're interested in that, it's Facebook, it's jimwillis.author. There's also a Jim Willis YouTube channel where I do some talking and some singing and play the guitar a little bit and all this.
Maybe you can post this, the video of this interview on your website.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Great. Sure.
So I want to thank you so much for being on Energy Stew.
Oh, Peter, it's been a pleasure. I'll tell you, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you and others like you who do this kind of work, who open up this kind of stuff to people who otherwise wouldn't have any access to it. And I really thank you for your work.
And to me, you're the kind of guy that my show is about. Energy Stew. And, you know, I love the experiences where you come from in life and how you've led your life to the place that you're in now. I'm really very impressed by it.
Thank you, Peter. Really appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. And I have a website, heartriver.org, that you might appreciate. And I look forward to hearing from you. And thanks so much for listening.